You're listening to Clock Radio Speakers with Armand and Doc. This week's episode is split into two sides. This is Side A.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to the first consecutive episode of Clock Radio Speakers in quite some time. I'm your co-host, Armand Wake Up. You can follow me on Twitter at Armand Wake Up, A-R-M-O-N-D, Wake Up, all one word. More important than that, please follow the official Clock Radio Speakers Twitter handle, which is at CRS Podcast. ClockRadioSpeakers.com is powered by Tumblr. All previous 301 episodes are there. We're also on iTunes. We're in the streets. We're in the clubs. We're in the barbershops. Wherever they talking at, that's where we are.
We're actually recording this live from the tunnel right now.
We're in the tunnel right now. Fat Man Scoop is getting ready to spin right now. That might be something to pop for. I feel like maybe my wedding could be like everything that Kairos 2 is supposed to be in theory.
Oh, I see.
So like Fat Man Scoop could DJ it.
Right.
I could get like, what rapper would I want on Kairos? I would want like Cannabis to do like all his Clue freestyles. Cannabis, Journalist, Joe Budden, Paul Kane, the A-Team. That would be fantastic. But what's up, Doc? Doc's here.
Yeah, I'm here. Everything's good, man. Y'all can follow me on Twitter if you want, at @doc_beats. That's not a Z, but like Armand said, just follow the show at CRS Podcast, clockradiospeakers.com for all things related to the show. Armand, you have a little something that came out.
Yeah, so finally, the Revelations Revolution video is on the streets, or in the streets, I should say. Just everywhere on social media. The label is sending it out to media outlets as we speak. It was on Radio U, so it's actually on a couple of television channels or cable providers, because Radio U has its own channel. So yeah, it's out there. If you haven't seen it yet, shout out to my man Mateli Graves. Some of you may also know him as Smurf Village. He shot the video, and shout out to, I need to find out if it's Gabio or Gabio. I don't know which one it is. I haven't like talked to him in quite some time. But he edited the video, and it's phenomenal. It's amazing. Even If I Lose is available now. If you haven't listened to that in a while, go back and check that out. And yeah, big things popping, little things.
Stopping. Yeah.
Stopping.
So yeah, congratulations, man.
Thank you.
It's been a long time coming.
Oh boy, has it.
Oh baby.
Listen, y'all, I just woke up from a nap, so I'm still kind of sleepy. So if I'm going to be really slap happy this episode and Doc doing the never let me down. Oh, baby. Oh, man.
I love that. There's going to be something important I forget about work or something else over the next week. But like every opening ad lib for like a 20-year span of music is somehow locked in my head. And somehow that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. They added the reverb on it too. I know Pick a K is the funny ad lib and reverb out on the streets right now, but go back and listen to Kanye Never Let Me Down. That Oh Baby. Jay has a lot of funny ad libs.
Well, yeah. I mean, sometimes Jay went to this very like kind of awkward sometimes stage, right? Like he really thought that like international hove was like something he should say.
I'm dancing.
Right.
Yeah.
Just Blueprint 2 in general has a lot of weird ones.
But that's indicative of hip hop in the early 2000s. I found a 12-disc, don't laugh at me, a 12-disc like Joe Budden compilation that I've been looking for forever. Do you remember when they used to have like those like Diary of a Legend? Library of a Legend. So Jay-Z has one.
Plus the one I had, the Jay-Z one I had, the Nas one I had. Yep.
Yep. So they did one that was called Growth of a Legend for Joe Budden. So it has every single Joe Budden song that leaked. And it's really interesting to like sort of retrospectively go back and look at his career and not when he's known for the mood music tapes. Right.
Right.
Musically. But like all those one offs that used to leak via On Smash and DJ Young Legend and like those mixtapes, he was chasing Pump It Up for a good 8 years. Like that compilation is full of really bad mid early 2000s club records with like knockoff Just Blaze, Scott Storch beats. and him telling people that we're going to keep it sexy, and lots of what's another ad lib? I had that big build up and just forgot all the ad libs that I was going to use. But hit us up at clockradio@crspodcast and let us know of your favorite hip hop ad libs that are just always do it for you, that you use in regular conversation, because those are a thing. And nowadays it's like, it's not cool to ad lib. Like, you don't really talk on the record, or you're actually having a, remember when it was cool, like, have a conversation with the engineer, not just to turn my headphones up, but like talking.
Right. There was some talking. Jay was notorious for, like, you know, for that. Of course, Joel Santana had a knack for talking back to the sample, which was always amazing.
Yes, he did.
Yes, who am I?
Oh, man, that's right. He did. We got one. Is
we got
stable?
We got one. That's funny. I tweeted about this, actually. I mean, I didn't even realize we were going to talk about this. So Sunday, actually, this whole weekend, I was at my in-laws because we had some family in town. And so it wasn't that hot. My in-laws have, like, an in-ground pool and, like, this whole, like, nice big backyard area where it's this huge patio. And so we're all hanging out over there, and they've got Sirius XM radio. And Sirius XM was just playing. They had a dedicated Aretha station after her death. And so we had that on for like 2 days straight. And we all love Aretha. And actually, I found some good sample ideas. I was like, I'm just zamming half the time. I'm like, oh, let me write that one down.
She got some joints.
I mean, obviously, like, that's an obvious thing to say. But some ones, well, I hadn't expected.
Joints is, of course, but joints is sample specifically.
Oh, well, sure. And then I think by Sunday afternoon, someone's like, all right, look, I love Aretha, but we need something else. So my mother-in-law puts on, like, I don't know, it's like some like best of 70s, like, Sirius. Because, you know, they have stuff by decade. Mm-hmm. It's like 70s or 80s. I can't remember which one in particular this was, but all of a sudden, Foreigner's "Cold as Ice" plays, mm-hmm. right? And of course, 2000s hip hop heads think of MOP "Cold as Ice," and so
of course,
even though like the original version is slower and not as pitched up, when it got to the part that they sample for the intro, I just mm-hmm. like, I literally, all I could hear in my head is, oh, you know, and it's like as yeah. high pitched and loud as possible, right?
Rapido!
Right, I just needed a soundboard with MOP ad-libs.
We do kind of need a MOP.
Just an ad-lib soundboard.
That Warriors album is still holds up.
Primo did some disgusting things on that.
Yes, he did. Follow instructions. Yes, he did. Yes,
based he did. Off 2K1.
Yeah, yeah. One of my favorite, not just my favorite, one of my favorite MOP records, but like one of my favorite rap records of that time. Like Billy Danz's verse, like, you ever want to feel pain? Mm. Like, he conveyed a lot of emotion on that record. And I don't think MOP gets credit for that.
MOP is just kind of forgotten in general. Like,
absolutely.
You know, they signed with G-Unit. That didn't really go anywhere.
Signed with The Rock.
That happened too. That also didn't really go very far. But they got a couple records.
Yeah. I mean, they were on the You Don't Know remix.
I used to think that was the greatest thing ever. Now it's like, it's fine.
Yeah. Somebody told me, Their introduction to Kanye West was "We Are the Champions." I was like, oh, "That's a jarring introduction."
What a great introduction! That's a totally forgotten about but fantastic song.
Yeah,
because that whole "Paid in Full" soundtrack is not on streaming.
Yeah, and that's trash.
So you can't get "Champions." You can't get possibly the most underrated Dipset record of all time. I Am Dame Dash.
And Dame Dash, Rock Army was on there,
right? Like,
yeah, they have some joints.
Yeah, somehow not on streaming. Not sure. I wonder if it's because, like, something to do with, because wasn't there like two versions? So there was like two different, there was two discs, I think. There was a whole bunch of
discs.
Like, there was a whole bunch of like just older songs in general. So maybe they don't have streaming rights for those. But like, you would think like the original Rockefeller songs, like if they have rights for it, they have rights for it. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah. I feel like Brucey B did, I think he hosted one of the discs, if not both of them. Something like that.
Champions.
Yep.
All right. So see, I didn't think we were going to talk about Dipset and MOP, but, you know, it's Clock Radio Speakers. So why are we here this week, Armand? As you pointed out when you opened the show, we are actually recording 2 weeks in a row, which for summertime is fairly rare around here. We like to take a week off every now and then.
Yeah. It's been more now than then.
More now than then. So why are we here? What's going on?
Man, so just watching the climate of music, I think it's a really opportune time for us to really like nerded out, Clock Radio Speaker style, just, you know, talking about Nikki and Travis and merch bundles and first week sales and what sales mean and transparency and social media and, you know, relationships and like a lot happened this week. And I thought it would be important and it would be irresponsible of us to not really delve into it and break a lot of this stuff down. Cause it's really interesting. It really is. It really is. And I haven't seen a real breakdown of what's going on. I think people are just reacting in real time.
Yeah. That's interesting. I think that what has happened over the past like 5 or 6 days is a continuation of what we talked about last week in a way that I just, you know, we like to joke online about, you know, Clostradamus. But it's true. Like, I really felt like we sort of saw what was maybe kind of going to happen. And so let me do this. Let me, if it's okay with you, let me lay out like where we were last time, what happened, and then we can get everybody up to speed and jump in if I'm missing something. And then we'll
previously
on Clock Radio Speakers. No, so previously on CRS, right? So we just, where we sort of last left off was how she had just added Fifi to her album in the middle of the week. And the theory was, well, she wanted to boost sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Additionally, I think, I don't know if we talked about this in the show or if it was just you and I afterwards, but she really ramped up her merch on her site. She had these crazy bundles, you know, like buy an enamel pin at one point for like $5 and you get the album and you get this. And she had like a signed lithograph for like $5. She had all sorts of stuff, right?
She had a poster. She had a necklace.
A necklace for like $25, right?
Which
also, of course, included the album. I think we talked about this last week a little bit, but like, like her brand. She has many parts of her brand, but one of them is like she is successful, right? She's number one. She's the queen, right? It's the name of that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yep. So, okay, I get it. Like, they really put a lot of effort into that first. And so all week it looked, you know, there are websites like hitsdailydouble.com, which if you are interested in sort of the numbers and the business of music, that's a really good website to check out. So Hits Daily Double had sort of forecast, you know, they really couldn't call it, you know. Travis might have had a slight lead, but they were like, man, this is really close. And they were going to have to wait until, you know, final numbers came in to see who was going to be number one, right? Nikki had the benefit. She had some tour bundles. She had her merch. And of course, like, she's Nicki Minaj. Like, that name recognition is no joke.
Absolutely.
Right? A lot of promotion. Travis had, even though it's the second week, huge streaming numbers still. And of course, he was doing merch bundles too. So Saturday night, we get some initial sort of numbers that say that Travis is going to be at number one. And Nikki was going to come in at number two, selling around 190,000. 190.
Yep.
I saw that Academics like posted something on it, and Nikki responded to his Instagram with the two words. She said, "Fake news."
Fake news.
Fake news. So the message from and then Nikki said some stuff on Twitter. The message from Nikki was, "Let's. The real numbers are coming on Sunday. Relax. You know,
everybody relax." Yeah. So she sounded like Doc.
But seriously, already really like showing a level of investment in numbers that you don't see all that often. Right? But okay. So Sunday comes out.
Except from her.
Well, so Sunday comes out. Right. Sunday happens. We get real numbers. We get the final numbers from Billboard.
Uh-huh.
Actually, Nikki sold 185,000.
Yeah. She was right.
It was fake. She sold less.
She sold less.
Travis beat her by about 20,000, what they call album equivalent. Right. So we've talked about this ad nauseum on the show, but real quick, there is a formula now that they use when calculating number one, right? It used to just be straight up album sales way back. I say way back, like a couple years back. It used to be straight up album sales. But in this era of streaming, that doesn't really make sense. So they have an equivalency of like if you stream X number, like X thousands of songs, it equates to one album sale, quote unquote. And so they have this formula and they apply it. So that way, artists who have really big fan bases on streaming aren't unrepresented in Billboard, because otherwise you would get genres or artists who predominantly have older fans. They would be the only people who showed up in Billboard 100, because those are the people who are actually buying not just physical copies, but even on iTunes, and who aren't streaming. And Billboard didn't do that, right? So they have this complex formula. So it was, you know, so Travis sold 205,000 equivalent albums, right? But this has been the system for a couple of years. Mm-hmm. And then chaos kind of breaks out because Nicki wasn't really having this and kind of goes on the first, what I would say is like a little bit of a Twitter rant, right? Mm-hmm. So she complains about how she's out here working on her album, but Travis just had Kylie post a tweet saying, come and see her and the baby on tour, which is sort of a, yes, that is a tweet that actually happened. And yes, you could buy bundles on Travis's site that included like sort of ticket packages plus the album. But just like with Nicki's things that she was selling on her site, people still have to actually go and redeem it. So, okay, whatever. You know, kind of, you know, she already goes right to the family, but whatever. Then she sort of talks about how she broke this record by being number one in 86 countries.
Mm-hmm. She went to the Wear Report.
Well, she was number one on iTunes in 86 countries, but she wasn't like number one on the charts in 86 countries. And even if she was, that wouldn't have been a record. Because Drake was number one in 92 countries on iTunes. Which makes sense. Drake's numbers are bigger than Nicki. She sort of really blamed Travis's use of bundles to inflate his sales, which is wild because Nicki is doing the exact same thing.
Dare I say, not to get ahead of you, but dare I say that he did a few things different from her that made his bundling more successful than hers.
Right. He had like limited edition merch, like a different, like different drops throughout the week and all sorts of stuff.
I tell people, study brands like Supreme, study brands like Kith, who drop every week and they drop in limited quantities. And you know, you don't have time to decide if you want it or not.
Right.
Buy now, decide later. So I'll buy this $30, $40, $50 t-shirt because it's only going to be available for this time and it's never going to restock. It's never going to come back. That's always going to work on the people. Always.
She criticized Spotify for punishing her because she debuted her album a little bit early on her Beats One radio show.
10 minutes.
Right. Which they then denied by pointing out that they did all this promotion for her. In fact, they had a billboard of her in Times Square. Spotify pays for, if it's got the Spotify logo on it, it's like Spotify pays for. Now, why would Spotify pay for that? Because they want Nicki Minaj fans to go to Spotify to hear the album.
Mm-hmm.
So she's sort of burning bridges with Spotify. Then she sort of tried to sort of equate her battles with a sexist music industry with sort of these, let's all widely acknowledge it, right? The struggle that women face in respective industries all around the world. And I'm like, okay, I'm not sure how that conflates with all this other stuff and sales and what's happening, but all right, sure. And that was Sunday night, but then there's still more stuff to come. She invoked Harriet Tubman's efforts to free the slaves with her efforts to free artists, make streaming count. She kind of goes back and forth. that was a bit of a stretch.
She said if Harriet Tubman would have sat there and ate her rice.
The rice really, I will say, rice really seemed like something that people grabbed onto. It was such a random detail. Yeah.
Right, I mean, because why would you even say that? Why would it be rice? That was just hilariously ignorant.
Was there like an old logo for a rice company that had like Harriet Tubman looking woman on it? Am I thinking of something crazy?
You might be thinking of Aunt Jemima. That was
not
syrup.
Aunt Jemima, but Minute Rice used to have no.
Because of course Uncle Ben.
I always wonder if she's thinking like Harriet Tubman was on rice because it was so random. Yeah. The problem now is if you search Harriet Tubman rice, which by the way, those are three words I never thought I was ever going to search for on Google. You're just going to get Nicki. Anyway.
That's terrible.
Yeah. All right. So then she has Queen Radio today.
Uh-huh.
Where she once again calls out Travis Scott, calling him the, boy, I don't even know. How clean are we keeping the show? She calls him the ho, we'll say brother of the week. That's not actually what she called him. For bundling, pulling in Kylie, and quote, selling clothes while y'all think he's selling music. She talked this whole time, like through this radio show, like this conspiracy going on, or there's this effort to like quiet artists who want to speak out against this bundling. And she, of course, is painting herself as somebody who's not scared to speak her mind. She's, yeah, taking the people on. She claims to have taken bullets, metaphorically, of course, for getting streams to count on Billboard, and then equated her struggle to do that with the struggles of Rosa Parks and Harriet Tubman, respectively. But then she ends it and just says, oh, this is all just entertainment. I don't know. I think that pretty much catches this up to where we're at right now.
Okay.
So this has been quite a week for Miss Nicki Minaj.
Sure.
So there's a lot we could talk about in Unwrapped. We could talk about what is this doing to Nicki's career. We can talk about, does she have a point, even if misguided, about streaming and bundling, and is that good and is that bad? We can talk about the bigger picture, which I definitely want to talk about at some point, which is artists and transparency and what happens and how this is an example of that. So I've been talking a lot, Armand. Where do you want to start?
I think we should probably address like the bundling.
Okay.
I think we should just start with the logistics of what she's talking about, and then we can get into some of the more underlying discussions. I think we need to deal with the facts right now. And then we can get into some of the other stuff.
Okay. So bundling, and by bundling we mean I think it's obvious, but bundling we mean the idea of if you buy concert ticket, merch from an artist's store, whatever, you get a copy of the album as well. So those two things are bundled together. The way that works is if it's a voucher or if it's some sort of thing where they're not actually also like physically shipping you an album, then the copies don't count until each fan goes to redeem them.
Redeem it, yeah.
Right. So just because you shipped out 100,000 voucher codes, if only 20,000 redeem, that's only 20,000 saves. But from an artist's point of view, if the value proposition you're selling is, oh, go ahead and we're gonna charge you a little bit more for concert tickets, but they come with the free album. Like if only 1/5 of the people actually go in and claim the album, seems like that's easy money, right? So there's lots of ways where artists have tried to make it work, but this is not new. It's not unique to hip hop. It is increasingly on the rise.
Absolutely.
I mean, Armand, I don't think you've bundled. Maybe you have, but you certainly.
Yeah, I've definitely bundled. I was bundling in 20. I bundled some Cairo stuff.
Armand's like, I was bundling before y'all thought it was cool.
we bundled a while ago.
Right. So you have bundled. Bundling is not, like I said, not brand new, but in this era of. I think there's a couple things, right? Number one, I think it's clearly easier than ever. Actually, I'm going to say one thing. I think it's easier than ever for artists to actually own their own online stores, which is this whole trend. But so...
Yeah. Remember, like Rihanna was bundling a long time ago. Eminem was bundling a long time ago. And it was kind of... People were kind of slow to catch up.
So, Armand, why do you think bundling is reaching this flashpoint now?
I mean, clearly nobody... Clearly all of the money is in touring.
Mm.
Right? So... When you go to a tour now, you kind of have an opportunity because not only are you paying for the seats or whatever, you're also going to pay for the merch. So when you're paying for the merch, you know, I remember at 444, I bought a T-shirt and it was one of the cheaper T-shirts that were available. And I think it was like $40. And it wasn't like 444 specific merch because I liked the branding. I liked the color scheme and all that. I wanted that. But like the 444 hoodies were like $100 and they did not warrant $100 price tag in terms of quality. So you were literally paying for the experience and for, you know, to just say you have some merch. Kanye infamously was printing out his merch on Gildan Tees and, you know, if you know anything about merch and about fashion, Gildan is a really, really inexpensive T-shirt. It doesn't fit very well. It's very boxy and bulky. And then you wash it once or twice and it shrinks and it's just trash. But for a lot of people, that was the appeal, as opposed to like an American Apparel brand, which when they were in business, their T-shirts would run you $20 to $25 a unit versus Gildan running you like maybe $3 or $4. So now you say, all right, well, it's not that people aren't buying, they're not spending money. They're just not spending money the way that they traditionally spend it.
Right.
If you go to Best Buy, the CD section is getting smaller and smaller. I think the last time I was there, which was a few months ago, it's a row.
I think I read something like they're phasing it out, if not already phased. Like it's not going to be around for much longer.
No, Target has a couple of rows, but Best Buy has one row for everything. Not one row per genre, one row for everything. And but you want those physical copies because some people still want to buy CDs. And then, of course, they're still inexpensive and they turn over. They have a wider profit margin. If I'm getting one CD pressed up for $1 and I'm selling it for $12, I want my $11. So, OK, let's give you access to the album, or because everybody has streaming, nobody's buying MP3s anymore. So let's get a little more into the future. MP3s are dead. You know, like everybody's just paying for their streaming service. And unless they really, 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 really like the album, you're going to buying the album on Friday morning or Thursday night at midnight is an anomaly. It's not the norm. So how do we get people to spend the $10, $12 so we can get that wider profit margin and then still get them to our shows? Because they're likely not going to spend the money on the show and the show and the merch. But let's just bundle everything together. Let's get you to buy the show after party in the hotel. Let's get you to buy the show. Let's get you to buy the CD. Let's get you to buy some merch. And yeah, if we lose a little bit, if we give you like a $5 discount or a $10 discount, the more important thing is that we're getting the majority of that profit margin with all three of those items. And I think that's where we are.
Yeah, I think the other thing that the other place this is going, and frankly, this is like just where our entire economy is right now, which is like all the money to be made is on the high end. Mm-hmm. And so increasingly, to quote the future poet laureate of the United States, Terrius Nash, there's another level after this other level, right? There's always a higher, deeper, more exclusive level to go to.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is like, it used to be that you bought tickets and what mattered was how close are my seats.
Mm-hmm.
And the only people who got VIP or whatever they want, you know, there was seats and then there was, I'm a friend of the artist so I can go backstage. But now there's like, okay, first of all, they're going to charge you a lot more to be at the concert. So then the expectations get raised. Oh, it's gotta be this crazy concert. All right. That's step one. Step two is, for a ton of these shows, especially any arena show from a big name hip hop artist, there's like, oh, do you want VIP package one, which includes access to exclusive merch and this like basically it's a lanyard with a thing that says like VIP, so you can be like, oh, I got look, I have some of those because I've like scammed. There've been times in my life I've scammed my way into VIP, and it's like, oh, it's kind of cool. You keep that around somewhere,
mm-hmm.
But like, so you pay for that, and then there's like, oh. Or you can pay this extra, and then you might, depending on how popular the artist is, you might even get like a photo op with the artist or an opportunity to take a quick selfie or whatever. Like, and they charge you for that. And what they've realized is you can get really passionate fans to spend a lot.
Absolutely.
Like, they want everybody in the building, but what they really want to do is they want to find. So let's, you know, if Madison Square Garden holds like roughly 18,000-20,000 people. Yeah, they want 18,000, 20,000 people, but they also want to figure out how can they make 200 people spend a lot of money, like mm-hmm. a lot of money. Like they're going to buy the certified Ticketmaster Platinum seats with the VIP package and the whole thing. And they're going to blow a grand, right, when all is said and done, which sounds ridiculous, but it's true. And so this is happening like all aspects of our economy, right? Like if you've flown a plane over the past 10 years, you know there's like, well, yeah, there's like basic economy in the back. Oh, but then there's regular economy. Then there's premium economy. Then there's like business. Then there's first. And then there's like this. There's always another level that they're trying to sell you to, right? And that's because the money is at the high end of the market. People who are really passionate about their thing will spend an unbelievable. And so that's where that's another way that they're really trying to make money. It's like it's tapping into all this, right? In a sense, like, you know, the way that the music industry used to work, they were leaving money on the table, right? They can't do that anymore because there's so much more competition for the entertainment dollar. But right, it used to be they'd be pumped if you bought the CD and then went to the show. But right. now, like, think about the artist you were the biggest fan of when you were like 16,
mm-hmm.
right? Your options were basically if they came to your town,
mm-hmm.
maybe you could see them on tour.
Mm-hmm.
Otherwise, all you could do was, or the only way you could give them money was to buy their CD.
Yep.
Right? Not anymore. There are lots of ways to give your artists money.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's you make a good point. It's the indie model where, you know, they say all you need are 1,000 dedicated fans. And if you can get those 1,000 dedicated fans to spend, you know, $10 on your project or, you know, $20 on your t-shirt, it'll be the equivalent of indie selling, you know, however many copies or whatever. Just you want that. It's like that direct sales approach where they could have got a bunch of streams of revenue coming from various ways versus limited streams of revenue. But those limited streams of revenue are giving a higher revenue. So if I'm getting $1 from 1,000 people, versus getting $5 from 50 people, you know, because you're going to get your fans who are going to really go all out for you. And Travis, and any artist that we've talked about so far, Travis, Nicki, M, Rihanna, they all have, for lack of a better term, very dedicated fans who will spend that money. Beyonce notoriously has, you know, has had $200 nosebleeds and $5,000 floor seats, and her fans will happily pay for that experience.
It's not even, I mean, I don't know. I see this now. It's not even at the major like level. Like, so an example, right? I talk about on the show, Francis and the Lights, right? Like, I'm, you know, Merce and I are huge fans. We go to his stuff. We've become friends of his as well. The show we went to in June at the Apollo, tickets were like, I don't know, 30, 40 bucks. They weren't that expensive. But when you got in the door, he did something that we were advocating that he do for a long time. And he just never really had the right opportunity, which was he was selling merch and a lot of it. And lucky for him, because he has a relationship with Kanye, like it was Kanye, like the Kanye's team designed and printed up the merch for him. So it's a style that is very popular right now. Right. That like, I mean, I'm not trying to denigrate anybody who bought it. Like, it's kind of that hypebeasty style, like what I would sort of call it. Like, you know, it's the same thing you talked about, like printed up on Gildan tees and all that. And the merch was more expensive. Most of the merch was more expensive than the concert tickets. And he sold out of the merch. They were done.
Mm-hmm.
He underestimated how much he could make off that.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably made way more money off that than if he would have charged 50 or 60 bucks a ticket. Or, you know, like sometimes there is value. Like, you know, if you can make money off merch, then there are other ways to be creative about what price to charge for your album, what price to charge mm-hmm. for ticket sales. Like, there's all sorts of different approaches, right? And that's absolutely the thing with the bundle, right? So, you know, Travis Scott, I mean, I thought this is, I've never heard of an approach like this before, where not even something that was a bundle, really, but he was selling what he called Astroworld season passes for $8, which mm-hmm. is a like a laminated thing, like a lanyard. And it gives you two things. It gives you early access to buy tickets to the tour, mm-hmm. and it gives you, on the day of the tour, it gives you early entrance into the arena, which means there's a really targeted fan base who's going to buy that.
Absolutely.
And those are serious Travis Scott fans who want to be general admission in the pit.
Mm-hmm.
Because why else do you need early admission to the arena? You need it for general admission.
I
was going to say, and to just sell that, they haven't even seen where people are going. Yeah. These people didn't even know if they could make it to the tour yet. They didn't even know what cities it was going to be in yet.
Right.
That's incredible.
Travis has a very, like, what label is Travis signed to?
It's through Grand Hustle. So Atlantic?
He signed to Grand Hustle?
Yeah. Oh, T.I.'s wow. getting that money.
Wow.
That's why on Rodeo, T.I. is like doing like the narration.
Wow. I had no idea. I saw a post, I think I saw on Instagram, Dame Dash, shout out Jason Jeter for having a number one album. I was like, what does Jason Jeter have to do with Travis Scott? But, you know, people have different hands in different pots, so I didn't really think anything of it. But I thought he was just signed to Interscope or something.
Nope.
Wow. Wow. Okay, so Travis has definitely, if Travis is a Mindy, like, he's the best case scenario of a Mindy artist.
Oh, he's not. I mean, he's a major label.
Like, yeah, but I'm saying, like, the way that he carries himself, his brand is very much, it feels like it's just Travis. It doesn't feel like there's a machine behind Travis. Like, one thing that we've, not to get ahead of what we're going to talk about, but it is clear as day that the building and the machine was behind Nikki. It was clear as day a few months ago or throughout 2018 that the machine in the building was behind Cardi.
So but when you say, oh, go ahead. And then I have a question.
Okay. But in Travis's case, though Travis has deals with Nike and all this stuff, Kanye and all these relationships, they feel more like relationships, and his fan base is what's carrying his fan base, and then his music being as good as a lot of people feel like it is. And then also, to your point about his tour, people will buy that premium because he has created a good reputation with his live shows.
100%. Like, I was trying to talk, like, before I realized that he was going to come to Hartford on a day when I'm not in Hartford, I was trying to start to slowly talk Marissa into going to see Travis Scott live. And it was literally part of the sales pitch was his shows are crazy. It's like something to see. Like it's a experience.
It's an experience.
What I was going to say is
he took that from me and that's fine.
That's okay. At least he didn't call it the Astroworld experience. Cause that would have been,
I would have went to go see Travis and be like, yo, we got a problem.
Would have had your lawyers call his lawyers.
Absolutely. Would have been a problem.
Real quick. You said the phrase, the building, when you were saying the building was behind it, just so, because sometimes we use terminology. What do you mean by the building was behind it?
Inside baseball. So there are lots and lots and lots of opportunities presented based off of relationships that the label has with other companies. So let's look at Nikki. Nikki has headlined the VMAs. Not only was she headlined the VMAs, but she was all over the show, right?
I mean, I could only stomach the first 45 minutes before I was like, no. And I'm glad because honestly, I didn't really need to see Post Malone performing with Aerosmith. Like that was not really on my list of things to see today.
You don't want to see Madonna's tribute to Aretha Franklin?
AKA she just talked about herself.
Yeah, I heard a condensed version of her speech and I was like, yo.
But okay, yeah, like the whole opening thing was clearly like, oh, like, you know, it like, so first of all, right, quick digression, the VMAs. The VMAs are voted by fans.
Allegedly.
Well, it's on, and it's like online voting, right? So, like, surprise, surprise, like Ariana Grande won an award, Minaj won an award. Not saying that these people aren't worthy of awards, but they have notoriously rabid online fan bases. Like, if Beyonce would have been up for something, although her and Jay were up for Ape-ish, but you know,
but they weren't there,
right? They're not there. I don't think they like tweeted out like links saying vote for me on this. Like, they didn't try to get people going, you know?
Right, but. If you notice, 90% of, and this might be tinfoil hat, but I don't think it is, 90% of the award winners are at the show.
Speaking of tinfoil, I was sitting there with Marissa and I was like, I swear they're gonna have Nikki win just so she can get up and say something.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And if it were the Grammys, part of me, most of me is like, you know what? I think the Grammys is mostly on the level in terms of, it's not like the producers of the Grammy show are like, oh, we're going to rig the results of the album of the year. That's not really the Grammy style. But it's the VMAs. Like, it's an award that does not matter. It's a show about moments, to use your terminology.
Sure. It's a show about moments. You look at Michael Jackson kissing. Who was he married to? Elvis Presley's daughter.
Lisa Marie Presley.
You know, Lil' Kim in her famous outfit. Like, yeah, it's known for moments. Like, right. Not... how many awards has Janet Jackson won? How many VMAs has Janet Jackson won? Does anybody know? No, but Lauryn Hill famously won, was it 5 Grammys?
Right.
That one year? You know, like the infamous picture when the artist cleans up at the Grammys where they're at the press table and it's hard for them to hold all of them up versus, do you ever see that with like Billboard Awards or American Music Awards? You used to.
The American Music Awards used to be a respectable number 2. Like
absolutely.
When we were kids, that was absolutely a respectable number 2. Now nobody cares.
Now nobody cares.
We can agree the lowest of the low is probably the People's Choice Awards, right? Like that's the, like, what is that?
The Kids' Choice Awards might be ahead of the People's Choice Awards.
I think that's true.
Yeah, I didn't even know People's Choice Awards were still a thing. They were sort of a thing when we were kids.
Well, we also, I mean, if we sound like old men, we didn't have much else going on like that.
and remind me that point when we talk about Nikki and Twitter.
Right. Okay. We have really gone up. We are sort of, I don't even know where are we at right now. I'm a little.
Okay. So we're just talking about, we were talking about Travis and, you know, him feeling his rise has felt more organic versus Nikki and some of the other artists where you could tell the building is behind him. And to answer your original question, it's the Rolling Stone covers and Drake a few weeks ago that Nikki referenced. Drake is on every single playlist. He's every single picture on every playlist on Spotify. Like, those are based off of the relationships that the label will have with other companies. And not necessarily, we really like this person, we really like this artist, we're going to put them on the cover. It's more of a, sometimes it's both, and sometimes it's Atlantic or that label making a call saying, this is our new artist that we want to put this money behind. This is their budget, because we know we're going to make this back. Because I'm sure Cardi's budget was astronomical, because she was everywhere. It's not cheap.
Attention costs money, man.
Yep. It's what some of the kids will call payola, right? In theory.
Look, you want to talk about payola. Wait, who accused Cardi of payola?
Flex. Recently,
it's Flex. Listen.
Like,
listen.
King payola. The face, if you look up, if you go to your Encyclopedia Britannica and you look up payola, there's going to be a giant picture of Funkmaster Flex Big Truck Series Volume 2.
I'm just envisioning, like, you open up the Encarta 96 CD case, you drop it in the CD tray, you push in the thing, and you're like searching Funkmaster Flex, and there it is. Anyway.
Absolutely.
Encarta was the bet, man. Encarta was like going from old school encyclopedias to Encarta.
Oh man, you're a nerd now, right now.
Sorry.
Come back.
I'm coming back now. So yeah, I mean, there is definitely something like Drake, his stuff feels calculated, right? Mm-hmm. Bigger name artists, which kind of makes sense, right? Like when you are really established and you have a track record for making a label a lot of money, they're going to check box X, Y, and Z and leverage this relationship and do this sort of stuff. And there are ways of looking at that, right? You can say either, oh, well, I'm really popular, so of course people want to work with me, or, well, you know, I'm really popular, so my label's going to put in the extra work to make this relationship happen. Like, there's lots of ways you can frame it, but this is just how it works, right? And so, given where Nikki's at in her point in her career, like, she's an incredibly well-known artist. Not at all surprising that she was going to have a machine pusher, right? That's the whole point.
Right. She's made the label a lot of money, so it doesn't, they know that they're going to spend that money because they're going to get it back.
Right. So, let me ask you this. In this era of, so, Let me back up a bit here. Artists have cared about sales. I'm trying to think when that really started in earnest. Like, remember, it was a big deal. This is going to really age us. It was kind of a thing when EPMD went gold, like a certain number of records in a row or something. Like, they kind of made a big deal about that. Like, that's even before my time, frankly. I think, like, reading about, like, artists going number of times platinum in The Source, definitely, like, as a kid, like as a teenager, really influenced for me. But like, in terms of artists talking about, like, Jay certainly talked about sales, but I wouldn't say he obsessed about it.
It was 50.
50 notoriously obsessed about sales.
It was 50. Right. And I think 50 and Kanye brought it to the mainstream.
Right.
It was very much like hip hop centered, you know, during the early G-Unit days, but it was okay because everybody was selling records then.
Well, yeah.
But, you know, 2007 is when, you know, that infamous Rolling Stone cover, I think that's when it went mainstream.
I'm trying to look up how much Curtis sold first week. I think an incredible thing about how much hip hop used to sell is that Curtis sold 691,000 copies.
Curtis!
And the lead singles for that were Amusement Park,
Ooh.
Straight to the Bank,
Oof.
I Get Money, and then
okay,
AO, and then AO Technology.
Oof. I know you like that record.
I like the beat. I mean, in a vacuum, I kind of like the beat. Oh, remember that? I forgot that album was supposed to be called Curtis SSK.
What does SSK stand for?
Sound Scan Killer. Which, again,
you see my face. Yeah.
Talks about, like, talk about the
Sound Scan.
Right, which is like a way of, like, measuring albums. As like, talk about, yeah.
I was going to ask you a question, side note, because we're clearly not going to, this clearly going to be two side episodes.
We thought this was going to be a brief episode.
No. What's a fire hip hop record with Justin Timberlake on the hook?
Ooh.
I think he's kind of played wiffle ball.
All right. Let me.
Let's see it. Let's go.
Yep. All right.
All right.
Featuring.
Going with Katie. Discography. It's featured artist. Signs?
Okay.
Okay.
I give you Signs.
I like Give It To Me. I don't know how much of a hip-hop record that is.
Is that the one where Timbaland was dissing Scott Storch?
Yeah, that's Timbaland and Nelly Furtado.
Nah, that's not a hip-hop record.
How do you feel about Dead and Gone, T.I.?
I hate that song.
Yeah.
Oh! Hey, shut up.
We all know how you feel about Holy Grail.
I hate that song.
Yeah. I mean, there's not a ton, actually, of big singles where he's featured. But let's... Wait, there's a remix of T-Pain's Can't Believe It that features Justin Timberlake?
Never heard it.
Oh, he's on Shades.
With Shades. Oh, Dirty Money?
Dirty Money.
That's not a hip-hop record, though.
That's true.
It's got Wayne on it, but yeah. That's an R&B record.
Yeah. He doesn't really have a lot of, like, guest appearances.
That are good.
Or just in general, to be honest.
I know it's your boy.
No, it's not my... I mean, look, he's... I'm not going to sit here and... We're not going to talk about Man of the Woods, okay?
What?
Yeah, boy. Came and went.
Came and went, and now he's just like a Nike ambassador. Now the only Justin Timberlake news is, hey, he wore these shoes while on tour.
It's too bad they couldn't figure out how to make... Man, was it Higher? That song. Anyway.
Yeah, too moody. Justin Timberlake is too happy-go-lucky to do a song like Higher. It would have to have been like him and Jessica Biel like split or something.
Oh, for that to be it's the Terrius Nash problem. You want him to have some relationship problem.
No, I'm saying like he can't put out that record. He can't put out that record just as a single. Like, I think when you look at the history of Justin Timberlake singles, his only sad song is what? Cry Me a River and Mirror?
Mirror is not even a sad song.
See, but it's kind of got that melancholy feel to it.
A little bit. Man, he really put out Supplies as a single. And the Neptunes really produced that. That's the...
They really thought that was going to be... Oh, did you go back and listen? Did you listen to the Ariana Grande album?
I did.
Okay. What'd you think of the Pharrell records?
I think there's one or two on there where I'm like, huh.
Yeah.
But then the rest of them, I'm like, nah, I'm good.
It's almost like I feel like they would have been better if somebody else would have sang them.
Well, yeah. Yep. I don't know if the way that he writes works well for Ariana Grande.
And maybe that's my fault because I still see Ariana Grande as that little kid that I used to watch with my daughter.
No, I mean, she's basically this generation's Mariah Carey.
She is, but I don't know. Oof.
She needs like an Always Be My Baby remix or something. You know, she's got a...
She needs Jermaine Dupri.
Who's her Jermaine Dupri going to be?
Pharrell?
Pharrell's not doing remixes.
Yeah, he's not. But those aren't even really like things anymore.
Yeah, actually, hold on. What is a hip-hop producer that specializes in R&B hip-hop remix? That's not even a thing, is it?
I feel like somebody like Mike Will could do that.
Kinda.
I think he could do it. I think Mustard proved it with the Boot Up record.
I'm surprised. Actually, Mustard could really do that.
Yeah, I'm shocked that was a Mustard record.
I mean, that's his artist.
That's his artist. Yeah, because her new thing, I think, is called Trip. It sounds like Boot Up Part 2.
Yep. That came on my playlist when I was at the gym this week.
Mm-hmm. I was like, okay, all right, this works. But yeah, okay, so anyway, Travis Scott and Nicki Minaj.
So I was talking about like when did artists start caring about sales? And like the problem with that is like, it's this problem that Billboard is grappling with, right? Like how do you, because what they're really trying to capture is like attention in a sense, right? Because mm-hmm. It's like streams, but it's like YouTube and like it's, you know, radio kind of plays into it, but that's a whole different audience. Like the Billboard charts is not the same thing that it used to be, right? Billboard charts used to be for albums, it was sales, and for singles, it was radio play and sales.
Mm-hmm.
But like, that's all we had. I mean, that I shouldn't say that's all we had. That's all they wanted to measure. Like it actually, in a sense, like I think they're trying to get a more complete picture mm-hmm. of attention, but I don't know. I don't think they've got quite the right mix. Like, actually, I think we've talked about this in the show before, but like, imagine if like the singles charts in the 90s would have somehow incorporated like views from MTV and VH1 based off ratings.
Right.
That would have been really interesting, actually.
Yeah.
Because that was a major way that people consumed, like, if they're trying to capture attention. But so because it's all about like the battle for attention, I think that like the Billboard charts are like an imperfect way to do that. I suspect they'll continue to like tweak, and then it'll be like, we're going to end up in this world where it's like, oh, well, a sale in 2018 is not the sale as like it's, we're going to end up with like, I just think they've like cracked open this like Pandora's box that you just can't close. Right now it becomes like an algorithm that you just keep tweaking. And so like, I don't even know if they should keep trying to do sales, if they should just try to have some sort of like, here's the artist of the week or what. Like, I don't know the best way to do this, but like in an era where like, well, how many up and coming artists really care about albums? An era where like,
right.
Someone like Quavo just puts out 3 songs on Apple Music, but doesn't bother to call it an EP.
Right. Like,
how we measure how much attention is captured, because that's what all these people are trying to do. They're trying to monetize attention, right? So like, but Billboard is attempting to measure who's capturing the most attention in a given week, but I don't really think they've done that. But I mean, that's, you know, we used to have this really imperfect but really precise way of measuring that, and that was sales.
Mm-hmm. Now exactly.
We're trying to get a bigger, more complete picture, and it's just way more. And
absolutely,
artists who came up on sales, artists like Nicki, you know, especially someone like Nicki who, I mean, look, like she brags a lot, but also like her brand is kind of built on being number one. She's on top.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So you have this like really fuzzy, imperfect way. And so we end up with Nicki dropping bombs on Twitter.
We hope you enjoyed Side A of this week's episode. Please check out Side B at clockradiospeakers.com.